Hey all, it's your co-host Nick here with Psychedelic Passage, and I want to share what our organization does and how we can help you on your psychedelic healing journey. We originally started Psychedelic Passage to give folks access to psychedelic therapy within the comfort of their own home. And in the process, we realized that most people have no idea what they're looking for in a guide, and they don't know which providers are qualified. The consequences of sitting with an unqualified provider are dire. There are lots of self-proclaimed facilitators out there who simply don't know what they're doing. And unfortunately, facilitator abuse and ethical violations happen regularly in this space and result in lasting psychological impacts. To solve this, we selectively curated a network of providers all over the US who operate with integrity. This allows us to help you as a client by advocating for you and your care without a conflict of interest, screening facilitators on your behalf to ensure they know what they're doing, and holding facilitators accountable for their actions, so you have peace of mind that the provider you're matched with is in good standing. Instead of searching through hundreds of unvetted online provider profiles, you can simply book a call with us, and our concierge team will take into account over 20 different variables to get you matched to a trusted facilitator who can provide treatment in the comfort of your own home. We want to give you the confidence that you're sitting with the right provider for you. No matter where you're at in the psychedelic therapy journey, we're here to help. Simply click the link in the show description below to book a consult and get connected to a trusted provider today.
Welcome to the Psychedelic Passage podcast. My name is Jimmy Nguyen. Great to be here with you all. Last week, we started an episode where I was dropping in with Dr. Felix Bly from QTES and Miraculix. In that episode, you certainly hear my excitement and my nerdiness, you know, coming out. I honestly feel like I was asking Felix like two or three questions at a time, and they were so good at answering. And so this is the second part of that episode where we continue to break down what we know about psilocybin and Dr. Bly's research as it relates to a lot of theories and hypotheses around psilocybin containing mushrooms, how they work, potency, whether strains matter, and the like. So drop in with us here as we continue the second part of our conversation with our guest, Dr. Felix Bly of Miraculix and QTES.
So I worked together with Sergio Perez, and he is an anesthesiologist.
Yep.
Anesthesiologist. But also worked in a ketamine clinic in Berlin, and is a psychologist. And so he has a lot of experiences in these effects. And together we actually wanted to research if there are different effects between these strains. So like you said, in cannabis, there are so much anecdotal stories, which were a lot of years before research just touched this. So our idea was to make actually a questionnaire for that. And we had really the chance of my Q test, so the quantitative test for psilocybin. And until now, the common hypothesis is just set and setting. It's how much you take and in which environment you take this. And if we can measure the psilocybin amount in front, we can eliminate this as a factor and can see if there's a difference in the if people like say all take 20 milligrams psilocybin, but different strains or different species, is there a difference in the felt effects?
Interesting. So to draw a couple of to add a little bit of context for our audience and to draw a couple of parallels here, when you're looking at clinical trials that have involved psilocybin, they are typically using extract.
They're using a GMP-produced synthetic, so it's something...
So not even an extract. They're using a... GMP stands for good manufacturing practice or good manufacturing process, which is like the standardization on how chemicals, medications, things like that, you know, come into our use. So what I hear you saying is they were using a GMP process synthetic.
Yes. And everyone gets the same dosage. And right. That's the next point, that even if you are a female and a lighter than compared to a white, so it's always calculated to a white male, which is 80 kilograms heavy. And that's where the dosage typically comes from. And one, what we want to take account is also these individuals, like the body weight and the gender, and see the difference effect on these variables.
Yeah, and you can understand that from a clinical scientific standpoint, because what they're trying to do is they're trying to remove as many variables as possible, right? Even when you looked at, let's say, other clinical trials that involve, let's say, MDMA, you know, clinical trials, they were using the same playlist, the same, you know, setting, the same materials, the same quality of headphones. So what they're trying to do here is they're trying to eliminate as many variables as possible. However, that doesn't actually apply to like everyday, you know, practice. For example, here, you know, I always had a thought that like body weight mattered much less when we were talking about the dosage of psilocybin, you know, containing mushrooms. Now I think the conversation is that it's not that body weight doesn't matter. It is actually that there's these other constituents in psilocybin mushrooms that would affect things that you're talking about, felt effect, potency, duration, how visually stimulating these things are versus what's felt in the body or you know, somatically. And I would actually be really curious if one day we can discover the mechanism behind the time dilation. Like there's this feeling with, you know, especially psilocybin mushrooms, where time like almost like stands still, and then we get back to like a normal linear, you know, cadence of time. So I think that's fascinating. And then I've also found with psilocybin mushrooms that it almost has this like wave-like effect where over, you know, periods of, I would say, anywhere from probably 45 minutes peaks and troughs of when it's feeling like very intense, and then you get to drop down into a little bit more, you know, stability. So I'm so grateful that there's people like you out there doing this research, because I've always had these curiosities, and it seems like your line of research may be opening the door for us to discover some of these things.
So let me explain how we got to this topic. So the idea was, like you said, to see if there's an effect, if there's a difference between the strains. And I'm coming out of the scientific world. So what I'm typically do is try to get some data and then talk to my professor or mentor about this. Because like I said, the common hypothesis is set and setting in a moment. So it's even hard to convince your professor in your university about this study. But the really good thing is with Miraculix, I can do also my own stuff. And this was a topic which was really important for me. And so I sat down and looked into different questionnaires which are already available, which are used in academics, like the mystical experience questionnaire or the altered states questionnaire. All of them had in common that they're used really hard to understand phrases, or maybe also misleading phrases. So our idea was really to develop an easy self questionnaire for everyone. And we made like a preliminary round of questions, how people actually felt different effects in these mushrooms, and correlated this with a lot of literature which is outside, and tried to make a really easy overview. So we just have like four dimensions now, sorry, like three dimensions. Mm-hmm. So it's just, like I said, we have the dimension with the senses. We have the dimension with the altered perception of your mind and your body. And the last dimension, the altered mood. There's a lot of stuff which can categorize into these items. Like you said, the feelings of these waves, the wave-like stimulation, or time standing still, or the loss of time. And we made a lot of examples under these categories so that you can see. So I did a lot of work with Sergio together to see which actually fits together. So we found out that there's a general more, your senses are much more available to you. And this can be a lot of senses. So you're hearing, but also the stuff you're seeing. But we made a clear line between the thing, the things which happens in your mind. So for example, the access to memories, but also the things which you experience with your body, because it's actually just your mind which is altering your perception. So what we actually try to do is a really easy questionnaire where can people really easy rate their experience and can say, or this was a more visual trip, or this was a more mindful trip, or this was a more...
That's fascinating.
Just these three categories, and we try to see if people then respond if there's more visual strains, there are more strains which are just regulate mood, and or just the ones which are more happens in your mind. And now we released just ask your question and then I will finish maybe the story of the question.
Well, I was just, you know, sharing in my mind that maybe there's a world where we can pinpoint the different constituents that would initiate a more somatic or bodily based process. Or maybe that there, you know, because I talk a lot about this non-specific amplifier effect. But to me, it's like a guessing game on what things come up to the surface for folks. But what if there was a strain that actually is more identifiable for you to, let's say, go back and process childhood trauma? Or what if there was a strain that could elicit a more like mystical or spiritual experience? And so I'm just, you got my wheels turning on, you know, thinking about, oh, there's kind of this like merging of this scientific research that you're doing, and then also a lot of the tenets of what I would call, you know, in the world of, I guess, like holistic or shamanic, you know, psilocybin or psychedelic work. And then there's almost the like, the felt effect and senses, and I'm kind of seeing all of that, you know, combined together, which I think is absolutely fascinating that there might be a pathway for us to be able to discover the mechanisms and how these things might be working all together.
That's like my current hypothesis, that there are different effects between species or strains and in these categories. And like you said, this could have huge effects on how you can use these strains in which kind of setting or with different diagnoses. Like you said, it will be much more helpful for someone with maybe PTSD to get a better access to their memories they just not want to think about, and not have a visual experience which maybe just distract from the thing you want to do with this person. And so the hypothesis is that there are these differences between the strains, and that's why we made this questionnaire. We made actually a new one for that, but also put in the end two standardized ones. So it would be really helpful if people use our new ones and also the standardized ones to validate our own questionnaire for the future. Then we can see, after we get this data on a totally neutral scientific standpoint, if there's an effect or not. And then I can go to my professor or to other people which are just saying it's set in setting, and then we can start this discussion with this data. So actually this questionnaire could be really the first scientific point where we can say there is a difference. We see on a statistical point there's a difference between strains. And now we can research these strains, which we found out are different from others, on a chemical base. So this will help me in the lab to pick the right strains. And so if I have two strains which act different from each other, I can just compare what they are producing in the lab and see if there are differences in the chemical composition, like you said, like different terpenes, beta-carbamines, or the precursors. So this could be really the base of a future scientific field. And what I wanted to have is like to really also bring people into this. So that's like a community research. And I want to take all these community really serious, not like in the cannabis field where, like you said, like anecdotal stories told this 20 years before. And
sure.
So like everyone can really contribute to this psychedelic research now with just sharing their altered experiences together with the psilocybin amount, which were present in these mushrooms. And you can do this with, like I said, our quantitative test kits, easy at home. Or if you had like a lab tested strain, there are a lot of HPLC test labs in the US, which are just starting to do these services. If you have like your experience and the number of psilocybin inside, then at the end, we hopefully have enough data from different strains to compare them together.
Mm. This is your work with the Q test has already been so massively helpful, not only for mycologists, not only for, you know, individuals seeking an intentional psychedelic experience, and they want to actually use your Q test to be able to like gauge potency. And then I also see this really come into play in the harm reduction world, which I really love, like people doing, you know, drugs and psychedelics out in music events and festivals and just generally like out in the public. So this is a massive call to action, I think, for our community. And I think the opportunity to, you know, participate in a community, you know, questionnaire, which is already available. It's already out there. And we'll talk a little bit more at the end of the episode on how folks can access that. But I love this blending of taking what you're finding in the lab, having that as a comparison to the anecdotal experience set and setting as almost a way to like filter out what you're finding as far as like this constituent that we're finding in a psilocybin containing mushroom might lead us to think that it's making this effect for duration or any of those, you know, felt senses and effects that we've been chatting about, you know, in this episode. And so, you know, I think for folks out there who are listening to this, who are intrigued, people who engage with psilocybin containing mushrooms, you know, regularly, I think the more we can get from the community of users, I think the faster we can learn about how these magic mushrooms do their magic, you know? And I was going to ask you a couple of questions, and you're already kind of answering them. The first was, does the choice of mushroom strain impact the psychedelic effect or qualitative experience? And what I'm hearing you say is that that's a yes, though I wonder if you can provide any other like layers of details on what you're seeing on how the strain specifically might affect the psychedelic experience.
I might can contribute another story to that.
Mm-hmm.
So I also developed a way to cultivate these mushrooms in liquid, so a liquid cultivation of psychedelic mushrooms. And in this way, I'm able to produce not only cubensis, but also much more rarer strains, which usually just fruit outdoors. And I did this for a company and in the Netherlands where it's legal. And we hand this out to different users in the smart shops. And they had to fill out a questionnaire. And we gave them actually two totally different species and got also totally different results from the altered effects they reported. And we gave them the same amount of psilocybin inside. So like I said, the dose was the same, but the full spectrum around was different.
Mm.
So this was the start of where I saw these differences in these strains. Also, a lot of people in preparation of the community research project responded to us with highlighting different strains with the same effects. So there was definitely a correlation of people reporting, oh, this strain is more visual. And this led us to making this questionnaire and see on a scientific base. So this is just a start. If we see there are two strains which are totally different or two species, we then can blind these species, for example, with the help of a spore renderer and ask people to rate them blinded. So this is just a start, and this is a project we do together with the Berlin Charité, so the University Hospital of Berlin, the famous hospital of the Charité. You know, I guess you know them all.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a working group about psychedelic substances. We have good connections together. So the whole community research project is a combined approach with the Berlin Charité, with Miraculix. And I made actually an ethical approach for that in my university, Jena. So as I have still a position in university, I was able to get my own ethical approval on that, because you can do this as a university employee. And so what we can actually say here, that this study we made is totally anonymous and checked for ethical and moral points. And this is important later if we want to publish this in a peer-reviewed journal. This will be the question. Did you had an ethical approval? And now, yes, we have an ethical approval. And this is nice for also all the people which contribute. They can be assured this is anonymous data. Nothing can come back to you. But also, we're going to publish this openly at the end. So that's the goal, to make this available to science, but also to people, and not put a patent or something like that on it. And the patent story is another story.
I mean, we could get down a whole rabbit hole of patenting psychedelics and psychedelic-related synthetics, which is like a whole other conversation that we likely won't have time for on this episode. And I'm really grateful that you all are taking not only an ethical consideration here, you know, anonymizing this. I think privacy is obviously very important given the legal status of a lot of these, you know, substances. And I also think that it's amazing that you have a desire to share that information, you know, with the public. You know, in the Reddit communities and the online communities, there are plenty of people who say, and you've probably heard this, like with psilocybin cube benzes, a lot of people call them cubes for short. So everyone's saying a cube is a cube is a cube is a cube, which means that there's a cube benze strain is really no different than any other cube benze strain, with the exception of certain ones, albino varietals or penis envy varietals, which people just generally know as just more potent strains. And, you know, now there's like mushroom potency contests in California and all these types of things where they're actually using your tests to aggregate that. And I actually think it's fascinating that there might be a psilocybin cubenzi strain that might have, let's say, half of the amount of, let's say, psilocybin, but maybe has more of a presence of these alkaloids that actually increase the bioavailability. Let's say, like, you could have a strain that has a high, you know, concentration of psilocybin cubenzes to, you know, up to the high 20% or something like that, but maybe they actually have less of a presence of these alkaloid, you know, profiles and things that make it less bioavailable. So that was going to kind of lead into my other, you know, question about this debate of strains and why that is, you know, like likely so, and like when does strain matter and anything like that. But I wonder if you have any thoughts there, and then also anything specific about specific strains in relation to potency effect as you're doing this research.
Oh, we're already like two questions.
Yeah. Still, I'm very excited to pick your brain about all of this.
I can contribute also two papers on that. So a recent paper which showed that cubensis varieties which were grown in the lab since like 50 years, or like cultured at home or in the lab, that's what I mean, bringing it away from nature, are degenerating. It's the same like which happens in cannabis, that these pure land race strains seem to have much more genes, much more producing a much higher diversity of molecules. So what we see, that common strains which we all know from cubensis seems to be degenerated. So they are just growing in artificial conditions, so they don't need to produce a lot of molecules, because some of them are just produced as a response to environmental factors or in different life situations. So it's already a big difference if you compare a cube, which is degenerated, so which is just grown again and again on the same nutrient source with your cubensis, which is freshly from a dung field and outdoors.
Wow.
They will have a much more diversity of molecules they produce. And yeah.
Wow. So we're talking about two different things. One is when you're talking about land race strains, I was in the cannabis industry for like almost 10 years. So I try to draw a lot of these comparisons, but we're talking about the stability of genetics. So yes. There are folks out there who are, you know, genetic breeders. They're breeding the new exciting strain out there and whatnot. And then there are these land race strains that have been present in nature generally for a very long time. We're talking about probably like hundreds of years, if not like thousands of years. And what we find is that those land race strains not only tend to have more stability, but also what you're saying is the diversity of the molecules and the molecular structure and, you know, all of the constituents like we're talking about. So what I hear you saying is that there may actually be a difference in mushrooms that are, let's say, cultivated in a controlled environment indoors versus psilocybin-containing mushrooms that you might go out and forage out in the Northwest, for example.
Definitely. Just think about some strains which are just a clone from one example, like truffles, which are all these ATL7 clones are made from one sample which was collected. And then everyone just...
I didn't know that, yeah.
And so what I want to say is like, and then people always just grow the same one with itself. So that's how degeneration works. If you would use the spores again from these, what people also start to do is now to clone back these landrace strains into the common cubensis varieties, you know, like the albino ones or the penis NY ones. Now people starting to clone these landrace strains back into the lineages to gain more of these molecules. So we can draw a lot of parallels to the cannabis world here already with the people want to grow them stronger and stronger in the first point. But now it's more also about diversity. So all of them starting to look in these other stuff, which could be inside or starting in different strains. And I grow different of these strains, like the albino A plus in the lab, versus more traditional ones. Like I had one, this was called the Hu Adla, which were, I guess, even back to Maria Sabina somehow. What I saw in general, that these mushrooms had a high fluctuation, even under my standardized conditions. I could have these albino AA plus with almost 2% of potency, but the next time it just had 1.2%. But if I grow them side by side, this albino A plus was always the strongest one. So what I want to say with that there seems to be strains which are stronger than other ones, but in the same time, you can have a high fluctuation in the potency. And this is true to different reasons. So research has shown that most of the psilocybin is already there when the mushrooms are really small. It's really important when you harvest them, because most of the mushrooms is just stretching and water. So, and this is why really a lot of small mushrooms seems to be stronger than a lot of bigger mushrooms, which are more matured, because a lot of the psilocybin is already inside the small amount and the small mushrooms. And then you have a big difference between a small and a big mushroom. So what I always advertise is to grind up a whole batch, because you even have differences between the stem and the head.
Sure.
So you grind up a bigger batch and then take a small sample. You can calculate with the Q-test or in the lab analysis. And then you know the potency of the homogenized material. And this is like the only way you can really be sure about the psilocybin amount, because this is such a high fluctuation between grow conditions or even different mushrooms.
Not only is this important from a strain effect, but this is also what I'm hearing you say. There's a massive importance on the care and the handling of these. And I'm particularly thinking about microdosers, who end up, let's say, like grinding down a whole batch and compare and maybe making capsules of microdoses for a month or 2 or 3 months. What I hear you saying, and I've always advocated this for folks, is to either daily grind or at least prepare enough capsules like for the week, because once you start to break down or grind down, you then start to get this effect of degrading the psilocybin or the other, you know, constituents in there. So just a little extra like added thought that I have in this fascinating information that you're sharing, especially for microdosers. So I would say to folks, if possible, keep your mushrooms whole, intact, dry, in a cool environment. And then as you can, grind or prepare the smallest amounts and quantities that you can that would get you through to the next, you know, few days or whatever as needed for microdosing. And, you know, it's pretty interesting. There's this mushroom strain kind of floating around Colorado that I found to be very fascinating. They're called Shiva Lingams. And I know very little about them, but there are some practitioners here in Colorado that have like specifically worked with this mushroom strain for, you know, a very long time. And yeah, do you have any other specifics of strains in relation to like potency and effect that you can, you know, glean from your research here? I know you've mentioned the Avery or the albino A pluses. You were talking a little bit about penis envy.
I think a really interesting strain we can look is the tidal wave or Enigma strain.
Tidal wave and Enigma. Enigma looks so fascinating. They look like these little like popcorn brain pieces. I can't really describe them, but I had the...
So a typical cubensis grows for, let's say, a week, a little bit longer. And these tidal wave or Enigma, the mutants, they grow for 2 months or 3 months.
Wow.
That's like they fruit this long. And at the end, you have this huge blob. And I think they won like the first psilocybin cup from Oakland Hi-Fi.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. With, let's guess, 3.5%. So almost 4%, I guess, was the result. So there are cubensis varieties, which shows like the typical GT, which shows like 0.5% up to 1%. And then you have these mutants, which now have up to 4%. And this is a huge difference already in potency between cubensis strains.
Oh, I was way off in my comment earlier. I was thinking about cannabis potency, which is in usually the 15 to 20 something percents. But thank you for this little mental correction there. And yeah, I'm curious as we approach the end of this episode, I could talk to you for hours, but I'm curious if there's anything else that you want to share, you know, with our audience. You know, I have already like stressed the importance of, you know, Q-tests and your work, why it matters in relation to intentional psychedelic work, strain potency, variability, dosage, you know, all of that. I think that's very clear for folks, and for folks who are interested, you can find more and access to Q-tests through our website, through our, you know, working relationship together. But I'm curious, anything else on your mind that you want to share with the audience as we wrap up this episode?
Please. In the community research, we just talked about psilocybin, but we are also researching LSD. So even not only if you have magic mushrooms, also if you're having tested LSD, you can contribute to the psychedelic experiences. And we also want to look at the dosage and individual parameters here. And this is more the part of the Berlin Charité, which is more the expert on, let's say, the LSD effects. They had some nice publications about the dose response curves. So this is together with Tim Hirschfeld and Tomislav Majicek from this working group, which published really nice papers already about LSD. And so the community research is not only about psilocybin, it's about a lot of psychedelics, and we start with LSD, psilocybin, but you can also just contribute your results from all the Q tests, and we want to use this as monitoring. So even if you don't want to tell us your experiences, it would be nice if you want to tell us how strong your LSD blotter was or how strong your mushroom was. And in the end, even the data just showing which mushrooms seem to have which potency will be really useful for the whole community, I guess. I can already see the cards of different strains, which with their typical potency and the fluctuation. And so if we all contribute to that with data we already have, in the end, we can help and boost science in a lot in this direction.
Amazing. Yeah. And thank you for referencing that. It's the Berlin University, the Charité or something like that, but they've been pioneering psychedelic substance research, primarily around like LSD and then DMT, 5-MeO, DMT, and mescaline. So for folks who, you know, were curious about, you know, what that is. And what we're going to do is we're going to put a link in the description for folks who are interested in participating in this questionnaire, and we'll be, you know, reaching out to our community. I think that, you know, very rarely do folks have an opportunity to contribute to scientific research and discovery, and not only scientific research and discovery that, you know, wins awards or peer-reviewed, you know, publications and things, but actually information that is helpful to the everyday citizen who is exploring psychedelics. So I think it's absolutely fascinating. And then also just another plug, I honestly think everybody should be using, you know, Q-tests in any type of way that you're wanting to engage, you know, with psychedelics. There's just another like piece of information that was not available to us until your work. So thank you so much for that. So this has been exciting. I think everybody can tell how excited I've been and asking like 4 or 5 questions at a time. Thank you so much, Felix, for joining us here. Dr. Felix Bly of Q-Tests and Miraculix. That wraps up our episode for today. And again, just a big thank you, not only to you, Felix, and to our audience and our community. I hope that you found this conversation to not only be fascinating, but I do hope that folks are able to glean any information that might help them have a more in-depth relationship to these psychedelics and substances. And so before we wrap up, I'll just read a little review from our community here. This comes in from one of our consult calls that our concierge call taker had taken. This says, the call taker was obviously very caring as well as informative. He did a very comprehensive initial intake, including answering all of my questions. He followed through, including referrals to several guides, just as he said he would. I'm not fond, to put it mildly, of these typical calls with pressure, upselling, etc. This was clearly a matter of somebody sharing something with me that they truly believe in just for my benefit. So shout out to our call taker, shout out to our concierge team, shout out to people like you, Felix, who care about their own passions in a way that really can be a vehicle and a mechanism to help folks. And so thank you to all of our listeners here. Tune in with us on YouTube and in our Reddit communities, on this podcast, on our blog. There's so many different ways to engage with us. I hope that not only has this episode answered a lot of questions, but I hope that this episode has raised a lot of curiosities for folks as they're figuring out how best to engage with these very sacred plants and fungi medicines. So, Felix, thank you so much.
You're welcome. I really like to talk about this stuff. And maybe the end, just please check our website. So we made an area just for the community research. You will find a lot of the publications I just talked about. You will find also links to our study where you can participate. But also this will be a page where also other scientists in the psychedelic field can post their studies, if they are searching for participants. So we're already having a lot of requests from other scientists, which are lacking participants. Mm. And so this is really a good way for the community to boost psychedelic science. And all these researchers have the problem that they are not connected to the community.
Ah.
Yeah, it's always hard to find participants which tell their experience about illegal drugs. So yeah. People have a typical, they not want to tell these stories. So what we want to start here is really like a site where researchers from this field looking for participants and our community, which answered these questions, but also they can ask me questions. Mm-hmm. So if you want to have stuff included in a community research regarding different strains or species or something else, this is really the point where we can start to work together. And like I said, in different steps, also research different strains further. And so this is really like a project where everyone can contribute their ideas and thoughts. And we wanted to take everyone seriously here. And this is the chance for that, I guess.
That's amazing. Connecting research to the community and opening up more pathways for more study and more research across a variety of different topics. And what's your website? Where can people find you?
So our website is miraculix-lab.com.
So miraculix-lab, that's miraculix-lab.com. Got it. So miraculix-lab.com. Cool.
Yes. Thank you.
Awesome.
Also on Instagram, please check our Instagram page. So I'm trying to make like more a communication of scientific papers to our community. So I try to always break them down to some easy sentences, make a lot of nice pictures. So if you are interested in all these psychedelic papers I just talked about, please visit our Instagram channel. We are making a lot of nice posts about this, but also posts about harm reduction and how to test different substances. So we try to really make an informative and educational channel. And it's also a Miraculix Lab. You can find us on Instagram.
Amazing. Thank you so much for your work, Felix. Keep going. Big supporter of your work. I'm excited with our, you know, continued collaborations together. Thank you to our audience as well for tuning in with us here. And we look forward to seeing you next time on the Psychedelic Passage podcast.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to it.
I am excited to share a new offering that can be found on our website, psychedelicpassage.com, which is our digital store. We here at Psychedelic Passage are constantly thinking about ways to enrich the intentional psychedelic process for our community. And now with this digital store, you'll be able to find preparation guides, integration guides, and recorded workshops that are typically only available to our clients. We hope that this is an exciting offering, and we look forward to adding more content over time. So check out the link in the episode description below or visit our website, psychedelicpassage.com. And we are very excited to expand our service offerings to the greater community.